Okay. We're on tape. There's no tape anymore. Okay. Erev Tov. I'm going to feel very threatened. Okay, why don't we start? So what we're doing tonight is some of the laws, some of the laws of Lashon Hara. There's not even nearly enough time, even if I added on 30 minutes to cover all the Hilchos Lashon Hara, but we'll try to cover, actually, what we're going to do is cover a very circumscribed set of situations. Really just four situations. The idea behind these two shiurim that myself and Rabbi Korin are giving is to kind of give case studies in these halachot. I'm going to be talking about Lashon Hara, and next week Rabbi Korin is going to be talking about Kibud Harim, about the laws of respect for parents. And that's talking about it's not for kids, it's for adults, that one, just so people don't make the mistake of sending their little children. It's not for little children.
15-year-old, right.
Right, it's mainly for adults. And what I want to do is I want to cover common situations that come up that relate to Hilchos Lashon Hara. Can you just pass these back to some people that came in?
Can I make a suggestion? Would you take two steps back and just turn it a little bit this way?
No, it's all right.
Okay. The four situations that I want to deal with are covered in the third section. But we're gonna wait to get there, but I'll give you the preview. The first situation that we're going to try to deal with is teachers or parents with children. So that is the case of Lashon Hara coming from children. And the question there is really more of a chinuch question. I think we've all had the experience dealing with children, be they small, be they a little bit, be they adolescent even. And you have a kind of tension there where you need to hear what they're saying, but at the same time, you want to teach them about Lashon Hara. The second situation is probably the most common, and maybe, I would say the most common, which is Lashon Hara between spouses, or even between very, very close friends. I think people have a perception that because it's your spouse, it's okay to speak Lashon Hara with them about other people, because that's, you know, Ishto Kagufa or something like that. So we'll deal with that question. The third section is really more for, I guess it's very, very, very interesting, but most interesting for professionals, and that's basically professional Lashon Hara and questions about doctors and therapists and maybe even teachers and their responsibility to keep people informed and to take care of the general population versus their responsibility to refrain from speaking Lashon Hara. And the fourth situation, which is probably nowadays even more common and maybe even more important than the spouse question, which is the news and the internet, newspapers and things that we read on the internet, like blogs and things like that. Okay? So those are the four situations that we should keep in the back of our mind, which we'll get to in specific detail right after we get through some of the principles. So we'll start with principles, and that's the first section. The Chafetz Chaim lists several different mitzvot asei and mitzvot lo tasei, positive and negative commandments, things that you're allowed to do and things that you're not allowed to do with regard to Lashon Hara. He lists something like 30-something, I always forget the number, different things, different places in the Torah where it mentions the halachot of Lashon Hara and things that you might be violating if you speak Lashon Hara. I just put here two. One of them is Lo Telech Rachil Ba'amecha, which is the primary source for Lashon Hara, which means literally don't be a talebearer amongst your people, which is another way of saying don't go from one person to another saying what happened. You know, I saw Ploni, I saw this person do X or Y, whether it's good or even, whether it's bad or sometimes even if it's good. Sometimes that can even be a violation of Lo Telech Rachil, Rachilut, of talebearing. And the other main prohibition is Lo Tisa Shem Ashav, which means that you're not allowed to use Hashem's name for a false purpose. But over here, actually, it's used a little bit differently. Chazal, the rabbis came up and they said it's not lo tisa, but also lo tasi, which means that you're not allowed to cause falsehood to be borne out. Which means that you're not even allowed to listen to lashon hara. So you have two separate prohibitions here, the two primary ones. One, not to speak Lashon Hara, and one, not to listen and accept Lashon Hara. It's not talking about listening with your ears. It's not your fault if you happen to hear Lashon Hara. But it's a different situation if you actually believe it and accept it as Lashon Hara. I mentioned someone at the beginning, the Chafetz Chaim. I assume most people are, in general, familiar with the Chafetz Chaim. If you're not, Chafetz Chaim, Rabbi Saul Meir HaKagan Cohen, was the author of the Chafetz Chaim, the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, which is the primary and seminal work on Lashon Hara, on speaking Lashon Hara. And he also wrote a Sefer called Mishneh Berurah, which also people are probably familiar with. I guess it's questionable which one he was more famous for, but people call him the Chafetz Chaim, they don't call him the Mishneh Berurah. So maybe that'll tell you something. So most of the halachot that we have nowadays are coming from the Sefer Chafetz Chaim, not because he made them up. He called them from Sfarim like the Rambam, and from Rabbeinu Yonah, and from the Gemara. There's no Hilchos Lashon Hara in the Shulchan Aruch. So that wasn't there. So the Chafetz Chaim had to kind of bring everything together, and that's what he did. So I think everybody understands what Lashon Hara is, and the fact that it's, you know, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me, notwithstanding. So everybody's familiar with that expression. It's not an American expression. That the idea that, you know, physical harm is one thing, but verbal harm shouldn't be able to harm me. This is something that we tell children when they get offended, and of course, it's not true. Sticks and stones will hurt you, and words will also hurt you. And I think everybody understands that, but sometimes we don't really take it to heart. So to kind of express that a little bit more concretely, I just have a keta here from Rabbeinu Yonah, where he was dealing with the concept of Lashon Hara. I have it both. Most of the sources here, a lot of them are in English, and some of them are in Hebrew, but I will take us through the Hebrew ones, and don't worry, if you have any questions, if you don't understand a word, just ask me, I'll stop. My pleasure. But here, I'm going to read it in Hebrew. You can read along in English. Rabbeinu Yonah says, HaMesaper Lashon Hara Shtayim Heina Korotav. If a person speaks Lashon Hara, so it's the first source after the Psukim, if a person speaks Lashon Hara, he has two problems, two strikes against him. Number one, HaNezek V'HaBoshet Asher Yigrom L'Chaviro, the damage and the embarrassment that he causes to his friend. U'B'Chirato L'Chayev U'L'Harshia Ad Chavirav V'Simchato L'Edam. And also, there's the fact that he's chosen to vilify his friend, to make it out as though his friend is an evil and bad person, or that there's something wrong with him, and the fact that he's happy about doing that. Now, what I want to concentrate on for a second is the first words that the Rabbeinu Yonah said, which I think we kind of know, but we don't take it so seriously. The fact that he used the word nezek, I think if we would... damage, nezek is damage. I think if I asked you, would you ever have even a thought to go over to somebody that is ostensibly your friend and just punch him in the face? I hope and I assume that most people here would say, no, I would never do such a thing. And then if I would say, punch him in the face, and then as he's falling to the ground, just laugh at him. And then bring over a bunch of your other friends and laugh at him, and have them laugh with you. Nobody would ever do such a thing. So why is it, if we know that speaking Lashon Hara about somebody causes damage, and let me enumerate the ways that it could cause damage. It could ruin their reputation. It could make other people think badly of that person. It could cause them to lose their job. It could cause their friends to despise them. It could cause a spouse to find out something bad about them and therefore cause problems in their marital relationship. There are all kinds of things that we can't even imagine that could be caused by Lashon Hara. And for some reason, we don't seem to be bothered by that as much as actually physically harming somebody. And sometimes it can be just as bad. So that's just to start off kind of a paradigm shift of what we're talking about here. We're not simply talking about, you know, a little bit of gossip here and there never hurt anybody. We're talking about things that could actually really cause a person harm. So now the Rambam is going to give us a little bit of a definition. What different kinds of Lashon Hara are there? Because it's not only one kind. So this is the third source on the sheet, the Rambam Hilchos Deos Perek Zayin Halacha Bet. So he says, who is a gossiper? Who is a rochel? That's the talebearer that I was describing before, the person who spreads gossip. He says, one who collects information and then goes from person to person saying, this is what so-and-so said. this is what I heard about so-and-so. That's the first level. And this, the Rambam says, even if the statements are true, they bring about the destruction of the world. This is machrib et ha'olam. It destroys the world in the sense that it destroys that person's world. Right? Even if the facts that you're describing are true, even if he really did, steal candy when he was a little kid, even if he really did, I don't know, you could think of a million things that people might do that people like to speak about, lashon hara. Even if he did do those things, even if it's true, it would still be lashon hara. It would still be rechilut. Yeah.
Where do you draw the boundary of to other people's good, the benefit to other people?
So we'll get to benefit in a few minutes. Assume for now that it's never okay to speak lashon hara until we get to when it is okay. So that's the first form. And that form is lashon hara about a person, even if it's true. It says there is a much more serious sin than gossip, which is also included in this prohibition, which is lashon hara, relating deprecating facts about a colleague, even if they are true. So the first thing was not even that first rechilut, according to the Rambam, was not even necessarily bad things. You're just talking about the person. And that talking about the person may lead to somebody else picking that up and saying, I also heard a bad thing about them. Or alternatively, it might even be talking about things that are a little bit vague. You know, you say, I saw so-and-so at the video store yesterday. And, the person that you're speaking to maybe doesn't think it's so okay to go to the video store. So even though what you're saying is not objectively bad, and it's true, the person you're speaking it to may take it in a bad way. So here, the second form is lashon hara, which again is true, but is objectively bad. Meaning you just said that this guy cheats on his taxes. And we're talking about, there's no reason to say that the person cheats on his taxes. The person that you're talking to is not an accountant, he's not a police officer, he's a computer programmer. So you're not gaining anything by telling him that, his good friend David cheats on his taxes. That doesn't help anybody. So even if it's true, that would be lashon hara. And then the final form, which is, but one who speaks lies is a defamer of character. This is moti shemra. And what does moti shemra, what word does that sound like?
Mitzora.
Right? That's one of the pseudo-sources for the idea that tzara'at, leprosy, that spiritual form of leprosy, is the punishment for somebody who speaks lashon hara. And in this case, it would be moti shemra, which is to speak badly about somebody, about something that is not even true. I say somebody cheats on his taxes, and he doesn't even cheat on his taxes. I say this person committed adultery, robbery, murder, and none of it's true. That's moti shemra. So you have three forms. You have rechilut, which is true facts, but they're not even necessarily objectively bad, and nevertheless are covered under that prohibition. Then you have lashon hara, which is true facts, but are definitely bad. And then you have moti shemra, which is not even true facts, which is the worst one. You're not even speaking the truth, and you're just going around saying bad things about other people. And then finally, the Rambam describes how bad is lashon hara. He says, this is good for the time period that we're in right now. The sages said that there are three sins which a person pays for in this world and has no portion in the world to come. Idolatry, illicit relations, and murder. Everybody knows the three worst sins of the Torah are Gila Arayos, illicit relations, Shvichas Damim, murder, and Avodah Zarah, idolatry. But lashon hara, the Rambam says, is the equal of them all. The sages further said that a gossiper is akin to a heretic, to a kofar, that a person who speaks lashon hara is even worse than all of those things. And they further stated that lashon hara kills three. It kills the gossiper, the person who's speaking himself, the one who accepts the gossip, because that's also covered under the prohibition of lashon hara, and the one about whom gossip is being said, the person about whom you're speaking lashon hara, which might be the reason why the Rambam is saying this. What's so bad about lashon hara? We have a concept that if you embarrass somebody, it's as though you've killed them. That if you embarrass a person in public, it's as though you've murdered them. So here, if you're the speaker, you've killed yourself because you've just committed murder. If you're listening, you've also just committed murder because you're accepting lashon hara. And the third person about whom you're speaking is the one who is the victim of the murder. So that's three people. And then the Rambam just throws in the one who accepts gossip is worse than the one who said it. Because, in this case, maybe you could say, because the one who said it might actually know that it's not true. But the one who accepts it actually thinks it's true. Okay.
Also, perhaps the one who's listening is encouraging the guy to carry on talking.
True. And he's also the one who facilitates.
They weren't listeners, they wouldn't be talkers.
True. Correct. Okay, so that's kind of Lashon Hara in the scheme of things. That's the base principles. Now the question is, what qualifies? We kind of were vague a little bit about this. So we have a few sources about what qualifies as Lashon Hara. Again, if anybody has any questions, you can stop me. I'm happy to answer anything. So the first thing is the Gemara and Sanhedrin. This is kind of, I guess this is the lowest, this is the low bar. The Gemara Sanhedrin describes, whence do we know that when he goes out, he must not say, I was for acquittal. This is talking about a case where you have dayanim, you have judges on a beis din in the court, and after they finish and they come up with a verdict, so if there were three judges, you need a majority, just two out of the three, which means that it could be the case that one of them was for acquittal, to say that the person is innocent, and the other two want to convict. So in that circumstance, what should happen is, okay, so we convict, but everybody stays quiet. Nobody says who convicted, who didn't convict. We keep everything, there's no transparency. There's no transparency for a Beis Din. Transparency is a place in the democracy, but Beis Din is not a democracy, at least in this sense. So he says, one who goes out must not say, I was for acquittal, whilst my colleagues were for condemnation. But what could I do, seeing that they were the majority? So this guy wants to make nice with the guy that got convicted. So he says, I wanted to let you off, but the other two guys, they're the ones who convicted you. So he says, Scripture states, thou shalt not go up and down as a talebearer among thy people. That's lo telech rachil ba'amecha. And further, he that goeth about talebearing revealeth secrets. Okay. It was rumored of a certain disciple that he revealed a matter stated as a secret in the Beit Midrash 22 years before. Okay? So 22 years have passed since a certain case had completed. And only after 22 years, one of the dayanim actually, I guess he felt that his, what's that called? When Sahal, after you've been debriefed, when it's not confidential anymore.
Classified.
Yeah. It's been declassified. He thinks he's been declassified. And in fact, so he went out and he said, I'll tell you what happened. Rami expelled him, he banned him, he excommunicated him from the Beis HaMedrash, saying this man reveals secrets, meaning even after 22 years you're not declassified. This is the concept of secrets, that somebody tells you a secret. This is rechilut. Was there anything bad about what the person said? Was there anything bad? I'm sure that the dayanim wouldn't have been ashamed of, you know, of this condemnation that they did. There wasn't anything wrong that they did, but nevertheless it was a secret, and to go about revealing secrets is a violation of lo telech rachil ba'amecha, even if those secrets are not even negative. The Rambam, here we get into the guts of it. Here's the Rambam going to give us a bunch of principles. Rambam says there are certain matters which are considered the dust of Lashon Hara. This is called Avak Lashon Hara. Avak Lashon Hara is kind of almost Lashon Hara. So what are those cases? What is implied? For example, a person says, who will tell so-and-so to continue acting as he does now? Or, let's not talk about so-and-so, I don't even want to say what happened. Or the like. Right? This is all things that we are familiar with. In other words, you know, two people are standing together, and one says to the other, even though, you know, let's say, you know, Reuven says to Shimon, even though Shimon doesn't know anything about Levi, Reuven says to Shimon, you know, who's going to tell Levi to stop cheating on his taxes? Shimon didn't even know that Levi was cheating on his taxes. And Reuven's making it out like, you know, I'm just trying to help him out. And really, he's just spreading Lashon Hara. Or, Reuven saw Levi, you know, in McDonald's in America, not in Israel. Saw him in a non-kosher McDonald's. I don't want to get in trouble. Non-kosher McDonald's. And Reuven says to Shimon, oh, you know, I saw Shimon at McDonald's yesterday, Levi at McDonald's yesterday, and he wouldn't even want to know what I saw him eating. This is not okay, because it's obvious that when you say I don't even want to tell you, that what you're implying is that they did something wrong, and even implying that they did something wrong is a problem.
But can I back a second? So your example of Reuben, Shimon, and Levi not paying his tax. If Reuben says to Shimon, how can I talk to Levi about the fact I've heard the fact he doesn't pay his tax?
Right. So
it's almost as bad, but potentially. Positive.
To get to the positive thing. So again, we haven't gotten there yet, still. I know you want to get there. That's fine. I assume what the Rambam was talking about here is that you're talking to a computer programmer. There's nothing he can do. You're talking to somebody who is not equipped to help. So all you're doing is just creating gossip in the guise of trying to help out a friend. You know, we all know people like this, you know, who come to the Shabbos table and then they start saying, you know, what are we going to do about so-and-so? When really they don't want to do anything about that person. They just want to give over the juicy gossip that they have. So this was the first case of avak lashon hara, where you kind of imply that something has happened. The second case is, similarly, it is also considered the dust of a lashon hara when someone speaks favorably about a colleague in the presence of his enemies. This is what we talked about before. For this will surely prompt them to speak disparagingly about him. Right? So this is not talking about, you know, if two Talmidim in a certain Rebbe's class are together and they're talking about how wonderful the Rebbe is. It's okay to do that because they both like the Rebbe, presumably. But let's say you can imagine, you know, a rabbi gets up in shul and he's speaking about a certain gadol, and it happens to be that there are certain people in the shul who have had bad experiences with that rabbi, and one turns to the other and ends up saying, you know, oh yeah, he says he's great, but you know, he ruined my X or Y, whatever. So that is potentially lashon hara. I mean, in a large scale like that, it's going to be hard to kind of figure out what to do. But we all know situations where you know that the person you're speaking to holds a grudge against the person that you're talking about. And yet, you persist in saying, you know, he helped me out yesterday. Which is only going to prompt the person you're speaking to say, yeah, well, he helped you out yesterday. But, you know, what he did to me on Tuesday was ridiculous. If you know that's going to happen, that is also avak lashon hara, causing the other person to say it. Third case, similarly, a person who relates lashon hara in frivolity and jest, as if he were not speaking with hatred. So this is a tough one. Here the Rambam has said that even making a joke about someone that is construed as lashon hara is going to be lashon hara. That's going to be under that violation. So this will eliminate 50% of modern discourse. But this is the reality.
You already covered the first 50%.
Yeah. But this is the reality. Someone who speaks lashon hara in frivolity and jest as if he were not speaking with hatred. That's avak lashon hara. Because you're causing the other person, to accept that this lashon hara is true. The fourth case, and this is the final one, this is someone who speaks lashon hara about a colleague slyly, pretending to be innocently telling a story without knowing that it is harmful. When he is reproved, he excuses himself by saying, I didn't even know that the story was harmful or that so-and-so was involved. So this, again, these are all cases where the person doing it knows exactly what he's doing, but he's trying to get out of it under the guise of being innocent. These are all considered avak lashon hara. They're not covered under direct lashon hara because they all have mitigating factors, but they're all really considered avak lashon hara, which is almost as bad. Okay. Now, we get to another situation of lashon hara, which you might have thought was not lashon hara, and this is introduced by the Chafetz Chaim. I'll just read part of it. At the beginning, he says, "Taluy lefi ha'ish shehu medaber alav." Everything depends about who you're speaking about, and here the Chafetz Chaim is going to introduce subjective lashon hara. Up until now, everything we talked about was objective lashon hara. I say about a person that he cheats on his taxes. I say about a person that he robs banks for fun. I say about a person that he hacks into databases and messes around for no reason. These are all objectively bad. But what about this? Echad omer davar echad al shnei anashim. Bechad hu mesaper al yidei zeh shivcho, ubechad hu aver al yidei zeh al yisroel lashon hara. You say about Reuven and Shimon the same exact thing. And yet, what you said about Reuven was fine. And what you said about Shimon was lashon hara. But you said the same thing about them. What did you say? Im yomar al ish acherim aspikin lo et mezono ve'in lo da'agat parnasa shehu lo med la'erech gimel lo da'at shalo bayom hinei lefi arko yihye lo ze lignai gadol. Let's say Reuven is a working man. He works in city, and he goes every day from 9 to 5, and then he comes home at night and he goes to the Beis Medrash from 8 to 10. And he learns 2 hours every single night. And, you know, I go on a friend, I talk about Reuven, you know, he learns two hours a day. Isn't that wonderful? But then you start talking about Shimon. And Shimon is in Bnei Brak, and he's in Kolel. And he doesn't go to work. And he learns 2 hours a day. And I tell that to my friend. So So is that the same as what I said about Reuven? Reuven works from 9 to 5 and he learns 2 hours a day. Shimon is in Kolo and he learns 2 hours a day. They both learn the same amount of time. But of course, we all realize that what's perfectly fine and even laudable about one person is Lashon Hara about another person. And the Chafetz Chaim is not only picking on Talmud Torah. It could be about anything. And really, it also depends about who you said it to, as we mentioned before. If you say it to somebody that has certain values that would, you know, paint the person that you're speaking about in a bad light, then that would be Lashon Hara, even if you don't think it's bad from your own perspective. Even if you think it's fine, that doesn't matter, because the person that you're speaking to thinks it's Lashon Hara. Okay, now we'll get to Toelis. We'll get to positive purpose. So jump to the last Chafetz Chaim on the page. Aval, im adavar nogelo al lahaba. If this is something to do, this the purpose of you saying this is for the future. Im emesu, if it's true, then kigon shehu mevin b'tchila hasipur. Sherotze laharoto b'sipuro ech shaploni eno ish mehemen ukai gavna. If, let's say, Reuven is telling Shimon, I know you're about to get involved with Levi in a certain business transaction, and I want to tell you, I have an experience with Levi, and it wasn't a good one. And I know that he kind of messed me over at the end of the transaction, and I don't think he's trustworthy. So is that Lashon Hara? So, first of all, it better be true. If it's not true, then it's Motzi Shem Ra. Let's say it's true, and Reuven really did have a bad experience with Levi. So that's what the Chafetz Chaim is talking about over here. He says, Vaya b'da'ato mitchila lachniso b'esko lishtatef imo. Let's say he wanted to start a business with him. O la'asot shiduch imo, or in the case of shiduchin, v'chol kaigav namuto lachatchila lishmo kedei lachush laze ulishamer mimenu. Then, it's okay for Reuven to say it to Shimon, it's okay for Shimon to accept and believe it. It's okay for him to accept it and to act upon that knowledge and to say to Levi, you know what? I think we're going to cancel this business transaction.
They can't believe it's 100% true.
Well, that's where the Chafetz Chaim makes it a little bit tricky. I don't know if I actually have it on here. The Chafetz Chaim makes it a little bit tricky. Yeah, at the end over there. So he continues. He says, "Ruah din heichad de'in nogel lo shum tova miashmiya, rakai de'shmiyato yisubav tova lachem gam ken yutar." And this would even be true if Shimon was overhearing this, and he could then go and tell somebody else. As long as this is for some positive purpose, it's okay. And as we pointed out, aval kabel dainu lachlit hadavar belibo shuemet asur b'kol kavne. So here the Chafetz Chaim makes it a little bit difficult, and he says it's true that you can cancel the business transaction, but you have to kind of bifurcate your mind. And on the one hand, accept that Levi is not so honest in the sense that you're going to cancel your business transaction, but at the same time, don't accept that Levi is dishonest, that you now look at him and treat him on a personal basis any differently. And the Chafetz Chaim is asking you to accept the fact that this is true, but only in a business context and not in a personal context. Okay? So some of the poskim, the Chazon Ish is one of them, said that this is a little bit too much. We're not malachim, we're not angels. We can't really reach this level where we can, you know, have this cognitive dissonance. He said, if it's true, it's true. And that's the way it is. But this is what the Chafetz Chaim meant when he said that.
Also,
yeah, two things. Yeah.
Maybe I'm messing with the names a little bit, but why should Shimon just automatically accept it from Reuven without doing his due diligence?
Right. That's an excellent point. In this case, well, that's part of it. The fact that Shimon doesn't know for sure that Reuven is telling the truth, that's why the Chafetz Chaim says that he can't really believe it. But he can still change his business transaction because he's just taking care of his own best interests. He can cancel his business transaction.
Most matters have two sides.
Yeah.
And maybe Reuven was sore that he could have gotten a better price, and
Well, that's up to Shimon. Everybody agrees that if Shimon wants to continue, he can. Right. This is, if you make a business decision that you're going to go forward, even though Reuven said this Lashon Hara, that's up to you. The point is, then you can change your business transaction based on Reuven's tale. Now, Reuven's done nothing wrong because from his perspective, everything he said is true and has a good toelis. That's the word. It has a good purpose. So I'm just pointing out Reuven's fine. Now, from Shimon's perspective, if he doesn't know, so then he can accept Reuven and cancel the transaction, but he can't really believe it. If he actually, the halacha is that if he had a way to verify that Reuven was a perfectly trustworthy person, then he could even believe what Reuven is saying. and he could actually accept it. But the modern day English svarim say that nowadays we don't have anybody like that. I don't know where they get that from, but we don't have anybody that is so trustworthy. I don't know if they would say that. I don't know what they would say that when you get the certain rabbi. Would they say that about a Rabbi Yashiv? You can't say what he says. You can't accept what he says. I don't know. But this is one of those, like, we don't have anybody like that anymore. Yeah.
What can you do in this situation to verify if you're the recipient of information about the person you're just about to do a deal with?
Yeah.
Who and how, or if?
You can investigate.
Can you investigate?
And yeah, you can investigate. You can investigate because what you're trying to do is you're trying to prevent. Let me put it this way, and this is something that we'll probably get back to. The question is why? Why are you allowed to believe? Why are you allowed? Why are you allowed to believe? And why is Reuven allowed to say it? Ultimately, Reuven is causing a loss to Levi. There's the three people. Ultimately, Reuven is causing Levi to lose a business transaction. Hasn't he just harmed Levi?
But he prevented a loss to Reuven.
Good. So all Reuven is doing to Shimon, all Reuven is doing is he's saying Shimon doesn't deserve to lose. So Levi is the one who's the problem here. So I'm going to take care of that. So from Shimon's perspective as well, Shimon is allowed to protect his own interests if he thinks that Levi is going to impinge on those interests. So he's also allowed to investigate that and try to find out. He should. There are rules around which he can do that, and that's what we're going to talk about.
So I'll give you an example.
Perfect.
Someone goes to see a house.
Yeah.
Right. And they start negotiating on the house. Goes to legal hands.
Right.
Starts incur fees.
Right.
Blah 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 blah.
Right.
Someone comes along to that person and says,
yeah.
"Do yourself a favor. Don't mess around. That guy never sells his house."
Yeah. So it's like this. It is grounds to be choshesh, which means to suspect. And it gives you the basis to cancel the transaction now. It doesn't give you the basis to believe that it's necessarily true, right? But if you want to, now you can cancel the transaction. You can cancel that sale. And if you don't want to, from a business perspective, you can go investigate it. It's up to you whether or not you continue going, right? That's your decision. But you can look into it.
Who?
I don't know. Give me an example. I don't know. I don't know. You give me an example. I don't know how you investigate this.
Can you go to? Can you ask other friends of yours?
Yeah, for sure.
You may know the people. Can you ask a Rav? Can you ask?
You haven't been able to do that.
Yeah. What have you done wrong if you do that? You're not saying. Maybe you shouldn't start the conversation. I heard that Shimon is that Levi is a liar. You start the conversation by saying, "Well, tell me about your experience with Levi." Because anyways, that person has a right to tell you, whether he had a good experience or whether he had a bad experience. Yeah?
I have a late example. It's a true story, unfortunately. So what if your accountant makes a big mistake on your taxes and you end up paying a lot of money to the government, and you have friends who are his clients?
Right.
Are you allowed to share that?
Cool.
He's not necessarily going to make the mistake,
right,
with them, but... this is someone that you've trusted for many years.
I guess I would say, what you just described, let's say it was a mistake, right? So if it was a mistake, like what you just said, he's not necessarily going to make the mistake. If you feel he's not going to make the mistake again, so then what basis do you have to go tell him?
Right.
But it's up to you, and keep in mind, like we were saying before, it's a question of, you would be protecting your friend. So you have to weigh in your mind, who deserves to be protected more here? Is it the accountant? Or is it your friend? If you think that it's just a one-time mistake and, in general, he's been trustworthy for 30 years, so then what are you protecting your friends from? It's not going to happen again. But if you think that if it's common, my parents also had an accountant, they had a problem every year until finally they switched off and went to another accountant and they had a problem with him too. But there, I think the situation was that if they had friends that were dealing with this person, they could have said something because it was a constant problem. You're protecting your friend. That's the idea of Toelis. Now, there are rules around that protection that we've yet to see. But the Chavetz Chaim is introducing this idea. Okay. So here he's going to give the rules. This is the rules for the Toelis. By the way, the Chavetz Chaim apparently used to say, people used to ask him all kinds of questions about Lashon Hara. And he said he got very upset because they would always ask him questions about, I think the example he gave was shiduchim. And this is related as well. If you know that somebody's, going to go out on a date with a person, that it's just not shaykh for them because that person maybe is a Rasha or something like that, whatever, they're just not a good person, they're not doesn't fit. So you can tell, you have an obligation to tell them that it's not good for you. This person is bad for you. So the Chafetz Chaim said, people used to ask me all kinds of questions about Shiduchim, and the answer was always, yes, it's fine to tell them. And they never asked me about the gossip that they used to tell at the Shabbos table. You know, they always used to ask me about questions that were obvious that they were allowed to say the Lashon Hara, and they never used to ask me about the questions that it was obvious that they weren't allowed to say it. So, you know, that's human nature. I think it's better to say a negative recommendation. I mean, that's why that's what recommendations are for, right? You're talking about in a context where, look, if you say nothing, then you may have caused damage to your friend instead of just causing damage to the person who deserves the negative recommendation. That's the idea here. And here the Chafetz Chaim kind of circumscribes it, though, and gives us a rubric within to work, which to work for this idea. He says, "Achma ma'od." I'm on the first source on the second page. "Achma ma'od tzarich lizaher b'heter zeh shelo yachzur bo kol pratim." There are details around this rule. Number one, I kind of dotted all of them. "Shireh zeh davar ba'atzmo." You have to be an eyewitness. It can't be secondhand. You have to be an eyewitness or the equivalent of an eyewitness. Equivalent of eyewitness would be, you know, you have absolute, you know, trust, what we were describing before, in the person who described it happening, which is, like we said, not going to happen. Two, lizar ma'od shelo la'achlik techav shadav rezehu b'chlal gezel v'hezek v'onas dvarim v'goshes v'keyot v'zeh rakit bonen heitev mitchila al pidarki ha'torah imadin imo. If the accountant, if you lost money with the accountant, but it's your fault, you can't go blame the accountant and then go tell on him to the other people, right? If you had a business transaction with someone and it didn't go your way, but it wasn't that person's fault that it didn't go your way, you can't take that bad experience and then project it to everybody else. It has to be that the person who about whom you're speaking did something al pi Torah wrong. It can't be just you had a bad experience and therefore you're going to speak about them. Says al pi derkei Torah, it has to be that he did something wrong. Number three, sheimu mishaer shefshar shemitvakachi mo batzmo yihiyah letoas. And this is a key. If you could just go to the person and take care of the problem, if you could speak to, you know, if Reuven could speak to Levi and tell him, you know, you have to stop doing this, then that's the first priority. If you could avoid the whole lashon hara issue completely. Number four, biyoter yizaher al kopanim sheyeh kol sipor emet. Don't embellish. You can't make stuff up. You can't make it sound worse than it actually was. Number five, shi'chavin l'to'elet v'va'ikar. This is probably the most important one, and we're going to see halacha l'masa. That when you do it, it can't be out of revenge. It can't be that you're giving a bad recommendation simply because you had a bad experience. It has to be that you're protecting someone. I'll tell you, I just had a bad experience with a certain landlord, and my wife and I have been discussing a lot. You know, if one of us wants to actually just find out who the next tenant is going to be and just to go tell them, you know, we had this bad experience. So we weren't sure, is this really the right thing to do? Because, you know, we never know if the experience is going to happen again. And I'm not sure that when we do that, we're motivated by this altruistic sense that we want to protect the next person. But whether we actually just want to cause, you know, suffering, or not suffering, but to cause problems for the actual landlord for what they did to us. So it has to be motivated from a place where you're, the whole heter was to protect your friend. If it's not about protecting, then that's just lo tikom lo titor. That's don't go for revenge or bearing grudges, right? So you have to have that altruistic sense intact. Number six, imu yachol l'sabeh b'tohel tazu b'itzacheret. If there's another way around it, we kind of covered that already. Then you have to do that. Number seven, shalei sabeh lo hezek yisubav lo hezek al yedei sipuro yoter mikfi adin. It can't be. The modern term is disproportionate. You have to have a proportionate reaction. If, you know, if he caused you to lose $5 and then you cause him to lose his job, something's wrong. That's not proportionate. Okay. Can I have two volunteers? Preferably a couple. Are there any couples here? Two volunteers, not a big deal. Yeah, come on. Come on, it's not a big deal. Okay, it's not a big deal. Okay, so we're, the first case that we're going to do is the children. We'll do these two cases all at once, okay? So you're the man, and you're the woman. In this case, you're the child. In the first case, you're the child.
I'm the child.
Yeah, you're the child. So the child comes home from school.
Definitely
roughing. Okay. The child comes home from school and says, go ahead.
Emma, guess what a boy in the class did?
I don't know, just tell me.
Yankee was cheating on a Cornish test and the teacher caught him. And then instead of going to the principal's office, he ran home to his parents.
Yankee Schwartz! Oh, that boy is always such trouble.
I know him, you always said...
Yeah, you always
say that he gets it from his parents.
It's true, they've always been wild, even back in high school. I can't wait to tell your father when he gets
here. Okay. So this is the interaction between a mother and a child. You're not done. This is the interaction between a mother and the child. There has been Lashon Hara. And the question is, you know, what should the mother have done differently? I'm not going to ask what the child should have done differently because it's not going to get us anywhere. What could the mother have done a little bit differently? Okay? Now we're going to do a second case. We'll just do it now so that we have it in our minds. Two spouses. You don't have to come in front. You can just do it from there. It's fine. Here's two spouses. Yes, husband.
You would not believe the day I had.
Would you like?
Tea and scones. I was proud of that. Tea and scones.
My boss Michael was in rare form. He parked in the tow zone again and got his car towed. So he came to the office in a bad mood. He started giving us extra busy work. And then we all overheard him talking on the phone to the front office, telling them that half of us leave an hour early every day. Of course he left the door open so we could hear. Then he tells us that we don't have enough budget for the Hanukkah party, even though we all know he used the petty cash to buy himself a fur coat.
Oh, well, that guy never learns. Why is he always so mean to everyone? Remember the time at the office Purim party when he went around and made fun of everyone's costumes, and meanwhile he was dressed as Santa Claus Hamtaki?
Yeah, that was terrible.
But I know what will make you feel better. Wait till you hear what little Yankee Schwartz did
today. Okay, so those are the two scenes, one with the child and the mother, and one with the two spouses, and those are going to be the first two cases that we deal with. Okay, teacher or parent with children. So let me make, let me get some feedback. What do you think about the first case with the child and the mother? Child comes home, tells the mother about all the things that happened in school. Did the mother react correctly?
No.
No? Why?
Because she should have addressed the issues that he raised rather than reinforced the view of the child.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Anything else? Okay, fine. That's good. Okay, so we have here, you know, really an issue of chinuch, and what you're saying is definitely true. So the first thing I would say is that Rabbeinu Ginsburg, who's a rabbi, I think he teaches in the Kollel, I think he also taught in NYU for a little while. So he said, my wife went to a shir with where she heard this, he said something very, very smart. When a child, you could tell that they're about to tell you something that happened. So you have to keep in mind that you need to hear what happened. You need to hear what happened to your child, what the influences that the child is having, if something dangerous is happening, you certainly need to hear that. And you need to be able to give your child tools in order to deal with life. And in order to do that, you need to know about what's going on in life. What you don't need to know, in most cases, and certainly in this case, what you don't need to know are names. So Rabbeinu Ginsburg said, if the child wants to tell you something, so you say to them, okay, first, I mean, is it a bad thing? Yes. Okay. So why don't you tell me the story first without names, and then I'll tell you if I need to hear the names. And that was a solution that he gave. I thought it made a lot of sense. Because you're telling, at the same time, you're telling the child, look, you're about to tell me something bad. Normally, that falls under Lashon Hara, but I'm going to let you say it to me because I think it's important, and I want to hear what you're saying. But you don't need to say the names to me because that's not important at the moment. If I determine that the names are important, then I'll ask you for them. Of course, the second important aspect is the mother's response was to exacerbate the situation by feeding it. And we know that she fed it because the son says back to her, "Oh yeah, you told me that Yanki Schwartz's parents were the same way." If your kids see you speaking Lashon Hara, then you don't have the right to say to them, "Don't speak Lashon Hara." Right? This is the old parenting quandary. You know, if you're exemplifying, if you're being an example for the child with bad behavior, then don't be surprised when they reflect that bad behavior back at you. If they hear you speaking Lashon Hara at the Shabbos table about everybody, then you can't say to them, you know, "Don't tell me about what happened at school and what those kids did." Obviously, there's direct chinuch about reading Hilchos Lashon Hara to your child, teaching them about the idea Lashon Hara Lamed Hey. Right? Yeah, we had a different ending to that song. And you have to find a way to talk about the issue in a constructive way. One source that we have over here, which kind of goes against what I said, but is probably in a different context from the story that we just heard, but is an important source. This is really for teachers, but it applies to parents as well, although probably in a much more tricky manner. So this is from the Igros Moshe. It's a very interesting tshuva. Rav Moshe wrote this answer twice. He wrote the answer, and then apparently somebody protested. And in a later tshuva, he said, "And what I said in that previous tshuva, I still stand by, it's still true." He was asked, "Ubedavar im rashai hamalamed, is a teacher allowed to tell his talmidim, shim yodin mi asa et hadavar haganai, yodialo?" In other words, some kid in class had done something bad. You know, maybe he put one of those whoopee cushions on the chair, and the rabbi sat down on it, and I'm not giving any ideas. And he wants to know who did it. He wants to know who did it. I had a situation like this. Oh, whatever, it doesn't matter. When I was in high school, I remember somebody sprayed a bad smelling smell in the room. And the teacher, first of all, she closed the windows, she closed the door. Some of the kids are like, "Oh, we have to go to the bathroom." She didn't let anybody go to the bathroom, which I think is illegal. She didn't let anybody go to the bathroom. It made us all stay. What was so funny was that... No, what was so funny was that nobody had sprayed anything. But we caught on that she thought somebody had. So we started acting like somebody had. And like the kids in the back started coughing and pretending to get sick and whatever. Anyways, she gave us an ultimatum. "I want to know who did it. Nobody's leaving the room until I find out who did it." So Ramosha is asked, "Is that okay? Can you basically say, I want somebody to come forward with the person that did it?" So he says, "Hu davar mechu'ar lasot." This is a terrible thing to do. "Dezei yigrom sheyakilu b'lashon hara." It will cause them to say lashon hara. Now I know some people are probably thinking, okay, but you know, the teacher needs to be able to enforce discipline, and the person who did the bad thing needs to be brought forth. He says, "V'acha efshar shelo yodea shelachin im haya zeh lekavana tochacha lishma mishum shaydezeh ye'anesh ve'yitivu darkam haya shayach lahatir k'demetzi." Okay, so what essentially Rav Moshe says over here is that it's true that theoretically it's fine for somebody in the class to be a tattletale. It's really theoretically fine, with the proviso that what? Because there's one condition here that is almost definitely not going to be kept. Remember, the Chafetz Chaim gave a bunch of different details, pratim, in what cases it's okay to say Lashon Hara L'Toelas for a good purpose. And there's one thing here which I mentioned at the beginning, and he said it was the Ikar, that is most likely lacking. When a bunch of children in class are being asked by their teacher to give up the fugitive,
somebody's going for a grudge.
Nobody there is altruistic. That's not what the kids are doing. The kids aren't doing it because they're trying to, teach that kid a lesson in terms of his own good. That's not what's happening. Either they don't want to be punished by the teacher, or somebody holds something against that kid, and therefore he's going to bring it forward. So Rav Moshe says, under that circumstance, there's no heter. There's no heter for them to do Lashon Hara. So what you're teaching them is that it's okay to do Lashon Hara in a non-mutter context. It's not permitted. Yeah.
I'm getting confused, but it seems like there are two conflicting principles at play. Mm-hmm. And the other one, which seems to conflict with what you just mentioned, is that by somebody saying, "Yeah, so-and-so put the whoopee cushion in," or whatever it was, with the stink bomb, you know, they're saving punishment on their classmates who are innocent.
Right. You know? Who are innocent.
I see
what you're saying.
Okay. Well, it seems to be, if I say that such and such an accountant, you know, screwed me over.
So I guess you get into a teaching question, which is, does the teacher have a heter to punish the entire class because of something that one kid did?
Right, but I mean... Yeah.
I mean, that,
yeah, it's a good
and if he does, and if he does, then that may be irrelevant.
No,
so, okay,
now,
so
now that that's done,
okay, but
then what's the thing to do?
I hear your question, and I'll do a parallel story, which is kind of against Rav Moshe, but it might not be because again, it's in a different age bracket. Mm. Rav Schachter said that he remembers that Dr. Belkin was the was the dean of was the president of YU many years ago. Apparently, whenever there was a discipline problem, he would bring the kids from a certain class into his office, and he would demand that they suss out, figure out who had done the bad thing. And when someone questioned him, he's in Lashon Hara, so he said, I'll tell you, I have a Masora, that as principal, I have a responsibility to take care of the school, and if I, and just like, oh, he made an analogy, he said, just like a Beis Din is allowed to send Shluchei Beis Din, he's allowed to send messengers to go take care of the business of the Beis Din. And then if they find out something good or if they find out something bad, they come back and they tell the Beis Din. Those Shluchei Beis Din, they're not really involved in the case. It's the it's the judges on the panel that are really involved in the case. But he says, just as those Shluchei Beis Din have the heter to say and listen to Lashon Hara, so too I'm allowed to send these students out in order to take care of. They're my messengers. They're like my arm. So that could be kind of a counter to Moshe's point. I don't think I'm addressing your point exactly, but that was kind of a counter. So you get kind of into a little bit of a tension here, where on the one hand, the teacher needs to find out what the truth is, and on the other hand, you don't want to teach the kids that it's okay to sell Lashon Hara. So I admit that there's a little bit of tension here.
I think you've got to differentiate here between discipline and Lashon
Hara. Yeah, one second. Yeah.
Discipline and Lashon Hara is exactly what you're talking
right.
about here. It's disciplining the kids.
Right. Right. But the question is, can you force the kids to tell you what happened? Right. Yeah.
Thing really happened to my son.
Oh, yeah.
He was in a Golan and in a very strong fighting unit. And it was in the beginning. And one of the guys there, he was writing Golani kavod or something, with a spray. No. Color.
Graffiti.
And it was forbidden. So the katzim came and said, nobody's going home until you tell who it was.
Mm-hmm.
And this guy, he didn't want to tell, and the others also know. Did the Katsim has the right to do so in the army?
So, it's hard. I don't know whether we can extrapolate from Rav Moshe's question about, in a Talmud Torah in Brooklyn with little kids to the army. I think there are definitely other values at play in the army where you really need to have that discipline. On the other hand, there's a certain value of the unit. I've never been in the army, full disclosure, of the unit, staying strong. I assume that that's also very, very important, that they should feel a camaraderie and that they shouldn't be telling on each other. I don't really have a great answer. Obviously, from the Katin's perspective, he thought that it was okay for him to do that. I don't really have a great answer, I'll be honest. It's a great question, though. Yeah, is there anything else? Okay, so that's as far as children in terms of chinuch, both for parents and for teachers. Now for the venting the spouse case, which is a very, very important case. What do you think about that one? What happened there? I remind you, the husband came home from a hard day at work. The wife offers him tea and scones, of course, and then they get to talking about why his day was so hard. What do you think? I mean, how many people? Okay, I'm not gonna. How many people do this? I mean, at least the first half. At least the first half. The husband comes home and says, "I had a terrible day." Maybe again some details. It's okay.
Yeah, but we don't get tea and scones.
You don't get tea and scones. Then it's not worth it. So, I think what's at play is clearly that the husband thinks and the wife thinks that it's okay that that they talk about this, because after all they're married and they need to have that kind of relationship where they can say anything to each other. Enter the Chavetz Chaim. Here we are in B, the first source over here on the right. Atana va'er lefnei mi asur lesaper lashon hara. We'll talk about who to whom it's you're not allowed to speak lashon hara. I don't even know why he starts there, because the answer is nobody. Ein shum chiluk beisur asipur bein im hu mesaper lashon anashim acherim krovav or chokav o leishto. It doesn't matter whether you're talking to other people, talking to relatives, talking to friends, or even to your wife. Unless you're telling her something that she needs to know for the future. In other words, you know, this guy is coming over tonight. He's a little bit weird, and he makes vulgar comments, so you should just be aware. You know, that's probably a good idea to tell her that. If you don't tell her that, you're going to be in more trouble anyway, so... His wife was ran the grocery that they both owned. So you want to tell her, you know, this guy's a thief, or this guy he sells at a high price, on a really high price. Or whatever the case this was. So you tell her, don't sell to this guy. As long as that's for Lito Ellis, that's for a constructive purpose. Was that a constructive purpose? To come home and say, Michael, you know, parked in the tow zone and whatever, all the things that he did, was that constructive? So here the Chafetz Chaim makes a very important and, like, probably the most, I don't know how to describe, popular gloss on his own book, gloss ever. He says the following: "V'efsher dehu adin im kavanato b'sipuro lapeg et dagato milibo." He suggests that it could be, and it's funny, he says this, it could be, and yet everybody accepts this as being Torah Misina. It could be that it's okay to tell somebody something if your purpose is to relieve yourself of tension and stress. Have kemechave l'to'elet al haba. It's a constructive purpose. For whom is it constructive?
Yourself.
Ulufize masham ruzal, and here he quotes the Gemara that we're going to see right here. Look at it right below. Sanhedrin kuf amid beis hashlomo amra the pasuk in Mishlei daga b'lev ish yisichena. If there's concern in your heart, if you're worried about something, yisichena. What does yisichena mean? We don't know. The Gemara says two opinions: Rav Ami, Rav Asi. Chad amar yisichena midato. Strike it from your thoughts. Don't think about it. Distract yourself. Discuss it with others. Dr. Palkovitz, the psychologist in NYU, told us that in his opinion, these are the male and the female tendencies. That the male tends that if he has something wrong, he tries to distract himself. He doesn't like to talk about it. He just wants to get it out of his head. Whereas the female, when she has something that's bothering her, she wants to talk it out. That's how she reacts. I think that it switches sometimes. I told this to Rabbi Arkef, and he said that he's the woman in the family, because he likes to talk, and his wife likes to just avoid talking. So this Gemara, this is a fascinating psychological belief, speaking. Yeah, one of these men are from Mars, women are from Venus, whatever popular psychology things that you talk about. Now, I have over here on the left side, this is from the English book of Chafetz Chaim. I hope you can all read it. I'll read it out loud. It says, "We have already seen that there are no grounds for sharing gossip with one's spouse." That was day 60. I have a book. Has everybody seen this book? It usually sold as two little volumes, Chafetz Chaim, A Lesson a Day, and basically you can go through the entire Sefer Chafetz Chaim. It's English, has on one side the halachot and the other nice musar and machshava stories. It's a very nice book. It's been years since I went through it, but I think I went through it like twice when I was in school, when I was in yeshiva. So this is from one of those days. "We have already seen that there are no grounds for sharing gossip with one's spouse. To view withholding lashon hara from one's spouse as a breach of harmony and trust is mistaken. A husband and wife who seek to have the divine presence dwell in their midst should build their home on the foundations of halacha and avoid conversations which promote strife and dissension among Jews. Moreover, sharing negativity does not help create a healthy, positive relationship." This is a very important point. You speaking lashon hara to your wife about your boss doesn't just, you know, give you an opportunity to laugh about something. It also tells your wife that you speak lashon hara and that you promote negativity. It and that does two things. Number one, it creates cynicism in the relationship, that we make fun of people. Number two, the classic problem of lashon hara is that how does the person that you're speaking lashon hara to know that you don't also speak about them behind their back, which is also a frightening thing. So nevertheless, when a husband or wife is in need of emotional support in dealing with difficulty, it is only natural to look to one's spouse for assistance. Speaking or listening under such circumstances is constructive and is clearly permissible. When possible, one should attempt... He said clearly. Okay? Fine. When possible, one should attempt to help one's spouse understand the situation in a way that would relieve his or her anger or frustration. If one finds that his or her spouse is forever in need of letting off steam, it is important to try to bring about a general change of attitude through discussion, reading, or audio material, or suggesting a meeting with a rabbi or other qualified individual. They assume that rabbis are qualified for this. Okay. A word of caution. While one must be prepared to hear out a spouse and offer emotional support when necessary, one must be ever vigilant not to be drawn into a conversation of lashon hara for no constructive purpose. It is often the case that couples fail to draw this distinction and consequently totally ignore the laws of shmiras lashon when conversing. Okay. What do we do about this story? What would you change? Can you guys, would you mind reprising without the text? And maybe ad-libbing and changing it so that it's okay? Would you mind? Give it a shot? Okay. What can you do to make this better? Go ahead. He comes home. You can offer the tea scones. It's fine. He comes home. You can start the...
It's fine.
Yeah, you can start the same way because... You can start with that. You can start with that because what did we say? We said that when the husband comes home, it's okay for him to relieve his tension. That part was fine. That's what I wanted to illustrate over here. That part was actually fine.
Making it specific to an individual?
If that's look, it's better not to, but if that's... You can't really be talking about anybody else from the context of the story. That's the point over here. If you weren't going to be specific, then you wouldn't need the heter. The reason the heter is there is if you really needed to say it.
I mean, you could say something generic, saying...
You could.
Some of the guys in the office were really, really ridiculous today.
Okay. I encourage you to do that, but let's say you couldn't. That's what this heter is. The heter is that if you need to get something off your chest, then it's okay to speak lashon hara.
I think the important difference is more the response, isn't it?
Yeah, like absolutely.
The response from the wife needs to be empathetic.
Yeah.
And how you might feel better about this situation.
Yes.
And how you might find a way to accept this situation.
Yes.
And not continue to talk about it to others or to let it affect them.
Right. So I think, I'm sorry, what's your name?
Or did you do something constructive about it?
Hmm?
Or in some cases do something constructive about it. There might be something.
Yes, you know, to have some empathy.
Well, if you read Mars and Venus, then you would know that that's not what you should do.
He had his car towed away. No wonder he was in a bad mood.
Right. I agree with everything you're saying. I think the point is that... I empathize with everything. I validate everything you're saying. I know all the buzzwords. The point is that it's perfectly okay for you to listen. What's not okay is for you to compound it by harking back to, oh, why is he always so mean to you? Remember that time... See, this is where we all get stuck, because I think everybody intuitively senses that it's okay to be the therapist for the other person. I know a couple where the wife's mother has a sister who's crazy. She's crazy. She's bipolar, something really... she's otherwise normal except when she's crazy. And it causes no end of agmas nefesh to the wife's mother. So... very, very often, the wife's mother will call up and speak to the wife and say, you know, this and this happened. And the wife starts out fine. She's like, oh, it's terrible. But then, inevitably, what happens? It turns into, oh, yeah, and you remember when she did this or she did that. So, at that point, you've broken the rules. Because when your role is to help relieve the da'aga belief, to relieve that tension. The second you start getting involved in lashon hara, you've lost the permission. You don't have it anymore. Furthermore, I found this in some svarim that described this halacha in the Chofetz Chaim. There isn't even a heter to believe it. Meaning, what are you doing? You're listening to your husband, but with the provided understanding that, you know what, there may be two sides to the story. I don't really know if it's true like that, but your job is to validate and understand and accept that everything he's saying is bothering him. You shouldn't indicate to him that, you know, you don't really believe him, because that kind of defeats the whole purpose. But in your heart, you can always say, you know what, I'm not going to actually accept this as being true about whoever it is that he's speaking about. This can definitely be a tough line to toe, but that's what's required. But exactly what you were saying, everything beyond just listening could be problematic, and this is something that's very important that you need to keep in mind.
Also any support for all of
With the exception of the next case.
What does that boundary go to?
Which boundary?
In terms of who you can vent yourself to?
It would seem to be anybody. There's nothing special about the spouse. It would seem to be anybody. Obviously, it should be somebody to whom you feel like you're getting something out of telling them, and that you can trust that they can, you know, they can keep a secret. And they're not going to go running off and telling everybody, because then you could be creating a bigger problem than what originally was there. But I don't think it would be necessarily limited to the spouse. The Chafetz Chaim doesn't say it is. When he's describing this heter, he doesn't say it's limited to the spouse. The third case that we're going to talk, I don't have a fancy story for this, but this is just kind of, this for most people, this is just interesting. I don't know how many people this will actually affect in real life, but it's an important concept, which is doctor and therapist. And this really, we have to read this Gemara, because, well, it's not for now, it's for after Rosh Hashanah, but it's also from Tzom Gedalia, right? What's the story with Tzom Gedalia? So this Gemara describes the story where Gedalia, who was a leader of the Jewish people, was murdered by another Jew. And the Gemara blames it on whom? Who does the Gemara blame? Gedalia. The Gemara says, that was the pit. They're walking by somewhere, and they said, that was the pit which Ishmael, the son of Netanya, had filled with slain bodies, as it is written. Now the pit wherein Ishmael cast all the dead bodies of the men whom he had slain by the hand of Gedalia. Wait a second. But was it Gedalia that killed them? Was it not, in fact, Ishmael that killed them? Owing to the fact that he should have taken note of the advice of Yochanan ben Kareach, and did not do so, Scripture regards him as though he had killed them. In other words, Gedalia had been told by a close friend that there was something wrong with Ishmael, and that Ishmael had plotted against him, he was going to assassinate him. And he didn't listen, he didn't accept it, and he didn't take any precautions at all.
So it's like suicide.
And, metaphorically, yeah. The idea is that it was his own fault that this happened. And while we might think, you know, isn't that Lashon Hara? The answer is, it goes back to what we said before, you have to be concerned for these things. You have to be concerned. Even if you don't even necessarily believe it, you have to be concerned for it. We can skip that story. So that is the concept of actually taking seriously something that you heard, that would, even if it was negative. And this gets to the concept of actually the responsibility of occasionally accepting Lashon Hara as a responsibility, and sometimes engaging in it as an obligation. What could be cases like that? Ravadi Yosef was asked about an optometrist, I think it's optician something, who has somebody come into his office to have his eyes tested, and during the course of the visit, the guy expresses to him that right afterwards he's going to the DMV to go get a new license, and he's not going to tell the DMV that he needs glasses. Sorry. Well, he used the word DMV. I'm surprised. Yeah, the Department of Motor Vehicles. Nobody calls it that?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. The Department of Motor Vehicles, the place where you go to get the Rishayon Nehiga. Mishara Rishon. That's it. So he's going to get that. So does the optician have any obligation to go and tell the Mishara Rishui that there's something wrong?
Sure.
Are there any doctors in the audience?
They can't figure it out.
Well, theoretically, it definitely is Lashon Hara. Theoretically, I mean,
you got to be driving on the road,
right? So
he's protecting five million other people,
right? So Rav Yosef obviously answers. He answers. It's obvious that you have an obligation. Not only are you allowed, but you have an obligation to go forward and actually tell. The only reason I would have said that there is an issue, because there's another Gemara that I didn't quote. It was a certain man named Tuvia who saw a man named, it doesn't matter, a certain man named Ruvain, this is a weird name, so I'm not even going to use that. Ruvain saw Shimon do something wrong, and Ruvain goes and tells the Beis Din that he saw Shimon steal an apple. And then all of a sudden the Beis Din turns around and starts giving Ruvain lashes, malchus. And Ruvain complains, Shimon does an Avera and I get the lashes, why? And the answer was, because you're only one witness. And you need two witnesses to convict him. So the only thing that you accomplish by coming forward is to actually just vilify him. We're not going to do anything about it. There's no proof. So the only thing you're doing is just speaking Lashon Hara. So you could have said, theoretically, that, you know, for him to go forward and speak, if the guy is not necessarily going to be punished for it or anything like that, if you don't really know, maybe it's not the best example. I take it back as an example. But either way, just get back to the point, Rav Adi Yosef says that, of course, he has an obligation, not just a heter, but an obligation to go to the Misrad Rishui and tell them that that this guy needs glasses.
You know, the bureaucrats that you won't listen to an optician or something, that it's better not to say something.
If you knew that, then maybe. But yeah, I guess it's probably not true.
Yeah. It's going to be very problematic. I saw an accident in the office. It was a 94-year-old who drove. He mixed the brakes.
The brakes and the pedals. That's happened a lot.
And he went with full speed into
right.
the shop and crashed the shop.
Right.
You know, his doctor should have known a long time that he was declining. And they didn't say because they didn't want to make a problem with him. And in this case, the doctor is obligated to tell at least him and his family to stop driving.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure.
Just a small little funny anecdote.
Yeah.
About 15 years ago, I took my daughter to get her driving test, theory test. And I was sitting in the waiting room, and she was sitting in the waiting room to go into the test. And a group of youngsters had already written their test, and they were waiting in the waiting room for their results. And there was a sign on the wall, no smoking. It was here in Tel Aviv. There was a sign on the wall, no smoking, and about 3 feet away from there, one of the guys took out a cigarette and started lighting a cigarette.
Yeah.
So I said, excuse me, there's no smoking here. He said, who told you? I said, because the sign says so. He says, I can't see that sign. I said, okay, I think I'll go inside and tell the tester that you can't read a sign from 3 feet away, right? He put it out, he ran away, because he didn't want me to see who he was, and that was the end of that.
There's a lot more material here for just this issue, but I really want to get to the last thing, which is the news and the internet, because that's really important for us nowadays. So we'll skip past the other stuff that I have over here. So we're in the last section, news and the internet. So the first thing I have over here is the Chafetz Chaim. This is probably, aside from the spouse issue, this is the most raging problem nowadays. And the Chafetz Chaim here is describing, well, what's the status of things that you read in the newspaper? So, of course, what are you going to say? That it's okay because...
It's printed.
Well, I mean, printed.
Right.
Everybody knows. So the Chafetz Chaim says, everybody knows. That once something has been said in front of three people, it's allowed to be spread. In other words, the Chafetz Chaim says, there is a law in the books in the Gemara you find, that once something has been said in front of three people, and you know this has been said in front of three people, it's as though everybody's going to find out. It's called chaver chaver itlay. Everybody talks. And you can assume that everybody talks, and therefore if some people know, everybody will know. And if that's the case, then it's not really Lashon Hara anymore because everybody knows. So the Chafetz Chaim says, no, that's not what it means. He says, it's pashat, according to Tosfos at least, one of the commentaries on the Gemara, he says that's not talking about objectively bad Lashon Hara, that's only talking about ambiguous Lashon Hara, about something that's not Gnai Gomor. In other words, if you're not sure if it's good or if it's bad, then you can assume what? You can assume that the person who said it in front of three people, he must have meant it in a good way. Because he would never have said anything bad in front of three people, because those three people will go and tell the person that he spoke about. So you must have meant it in a good way, and only in that situation are you allowed to spread it. Everybody follow? In other words, Reuven says in front of three people that Shimon, I don't know, come up with something that's kind of a little bit ambiguous, that Shimon...
Learn 2 hours a day, exactly.
Only 2 hours a day. So he could have meant that it's a very little, or he could have meant that it's a lot. So you can assume that if he said it in front of three people, he probably meant it in a nice way, and that's the kind of things that you can spread. But if it was something objectively bad, then everybody agrees you can't spread it past those three people. That's the opinion of Tosfos. And if the Chafetz Chaim had stopped there, then we would all know what the halacha was, and it would be very simple, and we'd all be in a lot of trouble, but at least we would be certain. But he didn't stop there. Yesh Omrim, the second part, he says, Yesh Omrim, Dim Echad Siper Gnut Al Chavero Bifnei Shlosha, Avtu Avr Bevada El Erse Lashon Hara. If somebody says a piece of Lashon Hara in front of three people, even though the person who initially said it was over Lashon Hara, Avl Pikein, Im Echad Me Ashlosha, Sheshama Davrazeh, one of those three people tells another person that's not Lashon Hara. Why? Because it's publicly known. And this is the opinion of the Rambam, apparently. This is the opinion of the Rambam, that once something is publicly known, it's not Lashon Hara to go out and say it to other people. With the proviso, and this is the last thing the Chofetz Chaim says, "Bedavka l'saper b'derech akrai, aval lo shit kavin l'havir akol b'lagaloto yoter." So that's a little bit weird. What exactly does it mean there? He says, that's only okay if you're telling it kind of on an ad hoc manner. Meaning, if Nathan and I are just conversing, and then just like kind of off the cuff, I said, oh yeah, and he did that the other day. And then we just continue conversing. That would be okay. But if I dafka go to Nathan and I say, I have to tell you what I just saw, Reuven Shmuley do the other day, so that would be Lashon Hara, even if everybody kind of knew, and eventually Nathan would have heard about it anyways. So that's where we stand in terms of newspapers. In other words, if the newspaper is just merely trying to spread it as a form of Lashon Hara, then that's a problem, and you can't even accept that. But if it's just kind of if it's telling a story and it happens to mention that, then it will be okay. So that's in terms of a little bit about the internet. I also put over here something I found. This is a quote from Arutz Sheva, where they justify the fact that they have a newspaper. This is supposed to be an Orthodox newspaper. And basically, they say that Rav Elazar Zalman Melamed is their posek, and he told them that not everything can always be publicized. It's a nice read. You can read it to yourself. Basically saying that we don't just publish everything in the newspaper. We rigorously check that everything is true and that it has some kind of benefit to the public by printing it. And that's the only way that they print it. I don't know whether it's true, whether it's not true about Arutz Sheva. I assume that it is true, but okay. Which brings us to the internet, which is the biggest problem probably in the history of the world in terms of Lashon Hara. Why? Not because I have anything against the internet. I don't. But the internet has a fun thing called blogs. And what are blogs? So some blogs are just people writing down their thoughts. They're very nice. I can give you a bunch of nice blogs. But what blogs really are, and what they were meant to be, was a way to outsource news reporting to the common man, which is a great idea from a free speech perspective, but a terrible idea from a Lashon Hara perspective, because normal people aren't trained as journalists, and they aren't trained to make sure that the facts that they're spouting are true, or nor are they trained to make sure that they understand that things that you write can actually affect and hurt other people. So some stom person writing on the internet, especially, and this is what I have over here from Wikipedia, especially if they're posting anonymously, which has the concept of the online disinhibition effect, which is the way it's been proven in studies that people act differently on the internet than they do and they act in normal life in terms of the things that they write, that even if they're actually posting under their own name, but kol shekein, even more so, if they're posting anonymously, then there are absolutely, people just lose all sense of inhibition. They just don't, they don't act like themselves because they're not accountable at all. If you look at the difference between, let's say, a Facebook post and then the comments under a Facebook post are usually relatively tame, at least as compared to you go to a random blog with all these anonymous names, go to a CNN article with the talkback and whatever, or J Post with the talkback. It's just hefker. It's like a crazy house. You can't believe the people that are writing are actually human. It just sometimes they don't make sense, and even if they make sense, they're just making these wild claims. Whereas with Facebook, it's a little bit different, at least because on Facebook, you post under your name, and you have to actually be accountable to the things that you say. So it's a little bit better. But most of the internet is actually anonymous. In that case, it's just basically one big chefs of Lashon Hara, because people are saying things without any attribution. They have no accountability. They have no training.
Their motives are certainly not.
And they have motives. So the combination of being unprofessional, unaccountable, and anonymous leads to probably the worst lashon hara that you can imagine. There's one last thing that I just want to mention. I don't have it on here. A lot of people think that it's only a problem to speak lashon hara about specific people, but to speak about groups is not lashon hara. This is not true. The Sefer Chafetz Chaim discusses this idea. So, for instance, if I were to say, Shiftei Yisrael, they don't give tzedakah. So, I'm not talking about anybody specifically. You know, the whole shul, Shiftei Yisrael, they're very marginally. I'm not talking about, I'm sure that there's one or two people in the shul that... No. To speak about a group of people, in Kol Shekein, to speak about the entirety of Klal Yisrael, to say Jews are whatever, that itself is itself Lashon Hara. Regardless of whether you're speaking about individuals or you're speaking about groups. Okay, so we'll stop here just to kind of go over what we did. The first point I made is the idea that Lashon Hara is not simply a nice thing, but it actually is nezek. It could be, not only a bad thing, but it actually is nezek. It could be damaging to reputation, to a job, to a relationship, just as much as physical damage. We talked about what qualifies. The concept of avak lashon hara, which is kind of implied lashon hara, things that lead to lashon hara, and then we spoke about four cases. I'm going to give a nice hand to the performers. We talked about lashon hara with children, the chinuch aspect over there, and we spoke about spouses, the possible heter of venting, but still the person you're speaking to has no permission to actually exacerbate the situation, to compound it with their own lashon hara. And then we spoke a little bit about the responsibility of certain practitioners, like doctors and therapists, and sometimes teachers, to actually actively go out and spread what would be lashon hara. But if it's for the good of the entire population, then that's okay. And then finally, we spoke a little bit about the internet, although there's definitely a lot more to say about that, about the internet and the newspapers, which is the final frontier, so to speak, of lashon hara. It's a shame. We should take some of these ideas, both in halacha and as chizuk, during these 3 weeks. We know that the Beis Hamikdash was destroyed because of sinas chinam, of baseless hatred, and lashon hara is one of the surest ways to get to baseless hatred. So we should turn that sinas chinam into avas chinam, Mirtz Hashem, and we won't have to worry about fasting and Tisha B'Av because we'll see Mashiach Tzidkenu from here.
Amen.
How many of the gentlemen have died in Mars?